This is Jason Horsley and The Liminalist, the podcast between. This is part two of my very scintillating conversation with Alan Green of Sync Books. You can walk an island way and you work all the doll in dust. Your eyes were staring at me while playing your guitar.
Yeah. This could get confused because you just there was a question I wanted a clarification I wanted to ask you towards the beginning of that statement, which I don't want to confuse. But then you said co-option, because this is a very real thing. So I'm not talking about co-opting movements, but a clarification to one of your first points there about fantasy realms, and you saying all the alternative perceptions is sort of an escaping to a fantasy. For me, I feel like the quote-unquote real, because I see like I don't know if you've been paying attention to the horrific downfall of Red Ice.
I've heard rumors. Is it to do with their becoming more right-wing or white supremacists and stuff?
Right. They are sucking the teat of Hitler pretty damn hard. I sort of wonder... All right, there's a part of me that wonders, would we classify because Red Ice used to explore alternative topics, right? They used to be open to really, they were the ones who put you and Katza on the sort of map, right? You guys were some of their first guests. So it's like they were.
I wasn't. Katza was. Katza, but yeah.
Okay. But I know you had been on at least a few times, right?
No, I not to get sidetracked, but it was really hard for me to get on. And first time I told Henrik to go fuck himself because he kept ignoring my emails. So that was it. I wasn't going to get on ever again. But then I really tried later on. And
gotcha.
I tell you, everything went wrong and it felt like he was playing me for a fool, and I got this close to saying fuck you, Henry, again, and I just thought, no, don't do it, just see what will happen. And somehow by a miracle I actually got onto Red Ice, and I to this day I see that as me overcoming the Archons or something, because I wasn't supposed to be on Red Ice because it did bring more people to what I do than anything else. But anyway, that's
gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah,
just
I mean,
to clarify that
again. I don't want to bite the hand that feeds me either. Is, you know, being on Red Ice certainly put Sync Book would be a fraction of what it was without the attention they were able to give. But I also feel like there's this Okay, so we're kind of breaking off into tangents here, but I think within the alternative communities there is. So much of it is based on don't rock the boat, don't bite the hand that feeds you. If Red Ice is the strongest game in town, or if you're a new ager and Reality Sandwich is the strongest game in town, or whatever it sort of is, you have to sort of kiss their asses, right? And mm-hmm. Red Ice says, hey, Hitler's actually really cool. People don't want to go out there and say, fuck you, you Nazi scumbag, because... then they get cut off, and they will never get those book sales again. They will never get that web traffic again. So no one wants to rock the boat. In this respect, this is a true danger to me. This is like a really apparent example of a holy shit, we're in trouble moment. This last summer, I was speaking to people, and certain people were like, hey, I really don't want to rock the boat. You know, I rely on those... I rely on those interviews, you know, and like I said, I've saw it for myself. No one, I've been on, you know, tons of different radio shows, and maybe you sell a few books or whatever. I mean, you know, you make $5, like it's nothing. Like, I don't know what people perceive. I don't know what your experience has been, but I've never had a huge boon. But doing Red Ice, the traffic came. You know, the book sales came. I was like, holy shit! Okay, there was that really good bump. And I understand right. How that in itself is something that people would rely on and not want to rock. But But again, this is the danger of co-opting, because then you can co-opt that and you get everyone under it. That whole umbrella of everyone who's following Red Ice, or the speakers who want to appear on Red Ice, are now beholden to that philosophy. So in this respect, again, it is I don't want to confuse the subjects, and I would love to talk with you about it. Co-opting a movement, super real thing. But just to go again, is the people who succumb to ultimate quote-unquote reality, where everything is a conspiracy, these people to me seem like another sort of escapism. They are so rooted in quote-unquote reality, so grounded that they can't see. And again, it's this one extreme to the other. And I wasn't sure, would you consider that the Saturnian reality, or would you consider
escapism? I was going to correct you, because I'm pretty sure I didn't use the term escape into fantasy. What I said was looking for things that make life more glamorous and more exciting.
Well, in that, okay, but sorry.
And so conspiracies serve that purpose
exactly.
Also, of course.
Okay, yeah, because your life becomes a James Bond movie.
Yeah.
Right, okay, so we're in agreement there. Cool.
Yeah, totally. I feel that that Red Ice thing is a very tantalizing thing, but I don't necessarily want to get sidetracked by it, but at the same time, I don't want to ignore it. So did you have somewhere you wanted to go still, or was
just,
that
just
the main
to,
thing?
Just to say, I am fully aware that movements can be co-opted. I think we have a perfect example of something we are watching right now in front of our eyes that is actually viscerally connected to many of us. I said a number of us appeared on Red Ice. We know these guys somewhat, a somewhat friendly basis. I don't know that they themselves are actually being paid. I don't want to say that they have been, bought by the government. It's possible. It's certainly possible. I'm just saying I have no proof of that. My thing is, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if director of the CIA knocks on Henrik's door and says, hey man, I want you to start saying Hitler's awesome. Or if he just woke up one day and said, okay, I'm tired of tiptoeing around it, I think Jews suck. Regardless what he does, he's in a position of authority within an alternative movement that, whether it was at the behest of a government agency or just his own biases, the effect is the same.
Are you exaggerating at all, or are they actually promoting these ideas in such concrete terms?
I'd probably exaggerate a little. But on their show, they're very, very careful what they say. Henrik couches it in intellectual wording of saying, I'm anti-Zionist, not anti-Semitic, which I would say for myself is true. But on Facebook, they're a lot more straightforward. I don't know who was running their Facebook account and their own personal Facebook accounts, but they were saying things that pulled no punches of their feelings of those magical three letters, J-E-W, seemed to evoke a very strong, strong emotion in them. Hmm. Let's leave it there.
Yeah, well, I'll have to look into it now. It's made me curious. I know when I interviewed Henrik for Stormy Weather, we mentioned David Irving. I can't remember if it was in the final edit, but we talked about David Irving because I was interested in him, still am a little bit, and his views, and Henrik, was also. So I felt it was something we connected over, because I'm skeptical, as you know, of any dominant narrative, and the more dominant it is, the more skeptical, and the more risky or potentially harmful it is to question a dominant narrative, the more suspicious I am of it. So the whole thing around Hitler and the Holocaust is an area that I don't go there because, you know, I'm sensible, I'm intelligent about it. There's no way that I'm going to put my neck on the line there and risk finding out things that if I talked about, I would get, you know, branded an anti-Semite immediately. But this is kind of interesting in relation to what you're saying about Red Ice being co-opted, because it seems to me that it seems almost like the opposite to me. Like I thought that Red Ice was co-opted a long time ago, whether they knew it or not. As you say, it's irrelevant, and in fact more effective generally if the main people don't know that they've been infiltrated, and you just have somebody in there who's, you know, just subtly directing things, or even, you know, just financing them without them realizing where the money's coming from. But Red Ice, it seemed from an early stage to have a certain established quality to it, the fact that it was growing so fast that made me suspicious. But now it would seem that what they're doing would be the opposite of what they would be doing if they'd be co-opted, because you can't survive being anti-Semitical and promoting.
Are you kidding?
In today's age.
Are you
kidding? Correct me if I'm wrong. Things have changed that much.
Do the math. First off, my opinion is I would love if this sync book stuff could actually pay my bills, right? Unfortunately, it does not. So I guess the good news there is I'm not funded by the CIA yet. You know, no
you
one's
live
no
in Virginia.
No, what's up?
You do live in Virginia.
I live in super military Virginia. For all your, you know, if anyone wants to guess a conspiracy about me, let me tell you something. I am surrounded by military. I'll just say this. It doesn't mean I like it. That's just where I am at the moment. That's a whole.
Anyway,
I will go.
Yeah,
I
do
will,
carry on.
If we ever want to go there, I'll go there. But anyway.
You're saying do the math.
Do the math. First off, you see, I'm doing something where I'm trying to say, let's put all the options on the board. Let's avoid having a belief system, and not to muddy the waters, but to say, let's not get bogged down in, you know, some ideology or some bias, even that myself might lean towards. I resist it with everything that I can to be intellectually honest. I'm still at that mindset where I'm really, really, really trying to keep as many different perspectives on the table as possible. And it does not pay. What pays, mm-hmm. what gets you your views and your subscribers and your whatever, is if you say, I've got it figured out. No one wants to hear, I don't fucking know. No one wants to hear some guy get on a radio show and say, I have no idea, actually. It could be this or it could be that. You've lost your appeal to authority. But if you get up there and say, hey, it's the reptilians, it's the Jews, it's the New World Order, it's the Illuminati, it's Beyonce and Jay-Z's satanic cult, guess what? Just look at the mind-blowing numbers. Go on Facebook. There are a million Illuminati fighting Facebook groups and pages, Wake Up the Sheeple, with like hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people on these things. You would think by now they would have some political power to do something about the New World Order.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Wouldn't you think so by now? They would have something going for them. But where's all that attention going? If you see a video that says Beyonce Illuminati, I mean, millions of views. Chris Knowles has pointed out, I know you and him had some beef, but Chris Knowles makes this beautiful point. He said, how come a video that shows Beyonce Illuminati does not get yanked off YouTube for copyright? He's like, because that's part of their marketing. It's part of the splash sensationalism. Otherwise, no one would care. We would see, here's some talentless schmuck gets up on stage at the Grammys and puts on a boring show. There's no story there. Talentless schmuck gets up on stage at the Grammys and puts some devil horns on and says something about the Illuminati, and boom, you've got a million views. Do you understand? It's a marketing technique. So in this respect, to get out there and say, as crazy as it might sound, there's some guy, you know, the guy who says, oh, I went to a teleportation chamber to Mars and I saw Barack Obama there, and we viewed the future through these goggles with on Mars with Barack Obama. And some other guy says, I got, you know, this is when I stopped listening to Red Ice, was when some guy gets on and says, I went and traveled to the cricket planet, and the cricket people were, and Henry just went, uh-huh, I understand. I'm like, no, I don't understand. What does that mean, he went to the cricket planet? Back up. Back the fuck up a second. So, to me, there's, uh-huh. like, but once you say with any authority, I met the cricket people, people will believe you. If you say, Beyonce did it, you know, Beyonce runs the world, people believe
you. I'm not sure if they believe, you know, they just don't really care. Yeah. This is one thing I said to Red Ice, to Henrik when I was on Red Ice, was that this is entertainment, what mm-hmm. we're doing. And Red Ice, I was saying it specifically to Henrik and Red Ice because it was already becoming very much like that. So, yeah, and that's fine, I suppose, except it's entertainment posing as information, then maybe that's not so fine. But I'm still curious about this, like, you're saying that Red Ice can subtly or not so subtly promote Hitler and anti-Semitism and not suffer as a result.
I believe, all right, let's just go there. Let's do it. So you got, would you agree that there is a right wing Christian conspiracy sect, as opposed, you have your like parapolitics alternative research, and then you have a very different subculture, which is Christian conspiracy. Would you agree?
Do you mean that there is a Christian conspiracy, or Christians who believe in conspiracies?
Christians who believe in conspiracies.
Right. Although they would have to because they believe in Satan.
Well, I'm saying the Alex Jones listener who says, you know, like someone who, like, right, exactly. One, the person who's even worried about Beyonce being a Satanist is by default someone who has a religious feeling about, ooh, I'm worried about Satan. Me, I don't wake up in the morning worried about Satan.
Well, not necessarily, because they might be worried about satanic ritual abuse of their children, regardless of whether even sure. abusers believe in Satan. We're still, but anyway, yeah.
But
continue. Yeah.
But you must know what I'm talking about. Like, there's people who say, like, if you're worried that Barack Obama is the Antichrist, you must believe.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know this subset. So you think that Red Ice is appealing to those?
Okay. Well, no, what I'm saying is, I know. I'm not trying to be intentionally vague. I'm just also not trying to be an out-and-out asshole. But I know, having spoken to enough people within the alternative research community, I have spoken to people who said, hey, if I talk about aliens, people say I'm crazy. If I say aliens are demons, suddenly there's a whole culture of people willing to buy my DVDs, right?
Right.
So why the fuck not say they're demons, mm-hmm. right? I've had these conversations with people who basically, like, here's the secret, here's the $1 million secret that no one, for everyone who's worried about people selling out, is that we are creating the environment in which our alternative researchers are selling out, that they're forced to sell out. Okay? Because when you get up there and you say, "Hey, I need you to donate for my podcast. I worked on this. I worked on my website. It took me 80 fucking hours this week. Can someone throw me a few bucks?" Right? You get a handful of people who throw you $2, $3. That's nothing you can live off of. So your mind naturally goes, "What the hell else can I do? Maybe I'll try selling DVDs. Maybe I'll try a membership section. Maybe I'll this. Maybe I'll do a live event. Maybe I'll write a book. Maybe I'll whatever." You start scheming in ways that you can actually subsidize your interest and to keep your skin in the game. Okay, I want to do this. I have a passion for this. And you're still trying to be honest and true, but it's getting harder and harder and harder. Every person that I have spoken to in the alternative or truther communities, they're all like really hard up for money. Like a lot of us have faced really bad economic hardships because we put all of our time and energy into this stuff. And there's not enough support coming from the listeners. Even people who have pretty good followings are not doing that well. So my point is, you don't need the CIA to come knocking on the door and saying, "I'll give you $1 million if you say that Dick Cheney is awesome or Hitler is awesome." You don't need that $1 million. All you need is for the person to reach a state of desperation where they go, "All right, screw it. I basically believe in aliens, and these people basically believe in aliens, but they want to call them demons. Sure, it's a little white lie. I'll just fudge this little bit, but I can basically stay true to myself and to get this many more DVD sales," right? Just that small little thing has broken the shell of quote unquote truth of the truth movement. So like I've spoken to so many people who have like tried to figure these little things and well, maybe I'll whatever. And I had a, like I said, I really don't want to give names, but I had a falling out with people because I took issue with that, and they took issue with my calling Red Ice out as being anti-Semitic, saying that I was succumbing to political correctness. And I'm like, well, I think there is a distinction. I think there is certainly a thing of, being politically correct. It's true that, it's very hard to talk about Zionism and stuff like that. That's absolutely true. But I think when it crosses a line, when it's not so subtly masked anti-Semitism, and you've crossed that line, I feel that I have every right to call you out on it. And if you don't like it, fuck you, and you can tell me to go fuck myself, and we're all good. But my point is that, so people said, "Hey, you become too politically correct. You're not really supporting the truth movement, the quote unquote truth movement." Yet these are the same people who don't mind going, "Eh, you know what? Let's fudge here and there our quote unquote truth because it'll sell better to the Christian crowd." I've had people tell me I'm specifically going to target the Christian conspiracy market. And if anyone who takes a marketing, like if you just look at the scene, it is very clear there is a market. So I have spoken to some of these Christian conspiracy people and saying, "Do you realize you're a market?" Like, I don't agree with where you're like, I'm not a Christian, I'm not a Christian conspiracy theorist. I'm not worried about the Antichrist. But just as a heads up, you guys do know that you've become a market, right? You've become a genre that people can market to. And you think that it's somehow the truth because it has a Christian label. It's the same thing as you throw, you have a band and there's some crappy pop band, but they can say, "We're a crappy pop band for Jesus," and people will buy their records, right? We learned that as a marketing pop culture thing. We learned that a few years ago. Oh, Christian rock, boom! That's a market. well, Christian conspiracy has become its own thing. And people are playing on their religious biases. So, you know, again, even though it's not I'm not the one being preyed upon, I'm realizing that, like, there are all these different, so, like, you and me, Jason, we could probably target the reality sandwich, right? Would you agree that there is such a thing as there's an audience there of those type of people, and I could start, you know,
I would know what they would want, yeah.
Probably better than that. But I guess my point is, there are little ways of selling out. It does not need to be co-opted from a political top-down, some FBI agent knocking on your door. And it's not to say it doesn't happen. What I'm saying is the climate right now, the financial and oversaturation of, like, everyone's got a podcast, everyone's got a blog, everyone's got a website, everyone's got a Facebook group, everyone's got a this. We've become competitive. We're fighting for very finite resources, or so it would seem, within these very small niche little genres. And people are like, what the fuck can I do? You know? And so I think seeing people make these small little sellouts or little concessions of their quote unquote truth, to me, it's not because they got the knock from the FBI. It's because they're like, how the hell am I going to pay my rent this month? And for me, that's why I keep saying, if someone say I'm muddying the waters, you know, more power to you. What I'm trying to do is I'm really struggling to ensure that I don't have an agenda. Sometimes to my own disinterest. I've promoted people who strongly disagree with me just for the sake of, like, you know, your piece for Sync Book 2, you said it was an S&M conversation where you're arguing with yourself. I'm basically doing the same thing. I'm just reaching out to you and going, hey, can you argue with me to make sure that I don't become a biased person?
So when what you were describing there in terms of this guy, people who want to write about aliens and they say, okay, I'll call them demon aliens because then we know that there's an audience for that. That reminded me of, I think I mentioned earlier, this, the idea of audience cult. So I mentioned William Sims Bainbridge anyway, and that I would send you links to him, his stuff, because I think it's very, very pertinent to what we've been talking about today. And he's not really known, this guy. And so while you were talking, I just did a quick search on DuckGoGo and whatever it's called, DuckDuckGo, and for audience cults. And the first link I found, it turned out, is quoting my own piece from the Army Sandwich. So how's that for a weird sync? But it also indicates how little known this is, this idea of audience cults. And what I rediscovered here is that the purpose of these audience cults is to generate hope, diffuse hope. I'll actually read a bit. The phrase audience cult was coined by Rodney Stark and William Sims Bainbridge in The Future of Religion, Secularization, Revival, and Cult Formation. An audience cult is not a religion, nor is it a formal group whose members can be identified either by one another or by themselves, and yet they can be identified by shared interest. People who believe in UFOs as part of an extraterrestrial experimentation hybridization program, for example, belong to an audience cult. People who believe in ancient astronauts from elsewhere or in psychedelics as a tool for self-realization, in regular meditation and a vegan diet, astrology, runes and tarot, communicating with the dead, the power of occult rituals and so on, all belong to one amorphous audience cult or another. These audience cults overlap with other audience cults, and membership to one does not prohibit membership to another. They also overlap with more overtly fantasy-based audience cults such as comic book fans, sci-fi fans, or Trekkies. Yes, it's worth noting that the area of overlap is not as great as might be thought. Sci-fi fans are often quite skeptical or dismissive of true believers and vice versa. The reason may be found in the following from the future religion. Quote, one very general but vague compensator is communicated through all audience cults. Diffuse hope. If extraordinary things are possible, then one may hope for anything and everything. Audience cults proclaim the existence of cracks in the structure of the mundane world through which any imaginable marvel might suddenly appear. If each audience cult projects a narrow ray of hope, then together audience cults project a broad, if dim, spectrum of hopes combining to form a vague impression of heaven. Thus, although each cult is far from being a religion, collectively they communicate a pale reflection of the religious. Audience cults are connected to a state of free-floating optimism, something less than true belief in the notions of the cults. The diffuse feeling that all things are possible but that nothing is certain to be true. Rather than thrusting people into a storm-tossed sea of confusion without anchor or life raft, this feeling may compensate for an all-too-rigid mundane life. Oh, so that was posted by Adam Roberts, the author. I didn't even remember that he had quoted me. So that's kind of cool. But anyway, ego boosts aside. So it'd be worth looking in, you know, at a later date, looking into exactly why Sims Bainbridge and these other guys who are military connected did this research into audience cults. But one simple summation would be that for capitalism to continue to thrive, people need to have hope. They need to have hope for the future, whether it's hope for heaven, whether it's hope for, you know, psychedelic transformation, whether it's hope that the aliens will come, or whether it's hope for space colonization. Whatever it is, people need to believe in a future, right? Otherwise capitalism, the gears of capitalism will grind to a halt.
I'm trying to imagine, as you're speaking, is there a way to provide people hope in a pretty messed up world that I want to show them some light of the possible in it because I've seen that. I've seen some, I've had a glimpse of the possibilities that I want to share without feeding just the pure hope of you know, a smoother toilet paper and a smoother shave and a richer, fudgier brownie or what, you know, whatever it is, right? Can we, how do we balance those two things? So if the audience cult is feeding into the overall machinery of false hope, I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And I don't, like I said, I'm not taking a stance. I'm saying I'd really have to think about it, because your point is valid, and at the same time, I've suffered with suicidal thoughts, and I've met a number of people within SYNC who've really, really struggled with suicidal thoughts, and I would probably err on the side of showing those people some hope and keeping them alive another day, even if it means, you know, the Kit Kat company gets to sell a few more Kit Kats. That's a loss I'm willing to take, you know. Does that make sense?
It doesn't not make sense. I'm not sure if it's I'm not sure if it's actually the nub of it, though. I don't think it's about whether if we provide hope to people and it really helps them, or it appears to help them, is it worthwhile if it's propping up the capitalist system? I think it's that if the hope that we're providing for people is part of this machinery, then it probably by definition is not authentic hope. It's not the real kind of hope. But I agree that the hope itself can't become a dirty word, even though I see this path to truth, the Saturnian path, as a path of disillusionment. And in Spanish, illusion and hope is the same word, ilusión. So they're very closely tied together. Like, letting go of illusions may seem like letting go of hope, and yet there is a true hope that is worth nurturing. I do believe that. So my question to you then is, what is it that gives you hope? Like, what is it that makes you hopeful in your life in general?
I know, as I said, I succumb to... I am super Saturnian, by the way. I mean, I'm a Capricorn. I'm actually born on New Year's Eve, so I'm like on the cusp of baby New Year. I am completely that Saturnian, right? My changed my last name to Green. I'm the Green Man Osiris. Like all these sort of things that I realized probably as an adult that's done a little more introspection. There's an archetypal angle, but there's also a psychoanalytical angle of maybe my own daddy issues, you know, sort of playing into it. As I said, my dad left when I was a month old. All of these things are probably embedded in that. But that realism, that groundedness, I can't help but that's a part of my very nature, both from an archetypal sense and also because I'm a New Yorker that's never had any money. I'm like sort of, I'd prefer the brutal reality over the sort of flaky West Coast, like airiness, right? It's just in me to be like harsh and real and okay, this is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But I have seen these glimpses of opening my mind to possibilities. Again, I'm gonna kind of refer to a phrasing that I really liked that Knowles used when he said sort of becoming symbol literate and being aware of synchronicities. Well, he's also spoken of the dangers of it. He said, doing this, it's like unlocking some technology in your brain. It's unlocking new pathways and new hardware, if you will. And it's just been so undeniable for me. This is skipping over the long form conversations of confirmation bias and getting trapped and, you know, all the things that we've kind of touched on throughout our conversation. At the end of the day, there is something so life-shakingly undeniable that I have experienced multiple times that seems to point to some sort of wiring under the board, some sort of interconnected nature that, as much as I will fight tooth and nail to keep from being dogmatic about it, you know, I don't want it to become a religion, and I don't want it to be a mystery school. I don't want it to be a codified set of, oh, we've got it figured out. But I'd be damned if I can't get up in front of the whole world and say, there is a genuine mystery here. And there's a genuine phenomenon at play. And it shows me that there is more possible than just the daily grind, the wars, the political schemes, the empire stretching across the globe, all the hardship that I'm all too aware of, knowing that there's something else. Again, trying to be really careful to keep it away from a religious or
dissociative.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to put into words. It's hard. Again, I don't want to codify it, but there is that. It's that glimmering thing. It's the diamond in the smoking rubble that seems to be glimmering, that says to me, maybe there are possibilities. Maybe there are still more possibilities. Maybe it's not all doomed to be a smoking rubble heap.
Would you say that you know this?
I would say I know that there is a phenomenon or series of phenomena. I know. But that synchronicity is a real phenomenon. It's not just the psychological, confirmation bias or trick of the mind. That I would say I know. As far as, would I say I know that there is this glimmering hope of an intelligent universe that's, you know, some sort of pronoia thing? No, I wouldn't say I know it, but I would say I got my fingers crossed. I'm rooting for it.
See, this is, to me, would be a key difference between real hope and false hope, then, would be that hope that is based on belief is going to... it's not going to weather the Saturnian storm, whereas hope that is based on knowing, it will survive. And my sense is that you do know, you just don't want to say it. You do know that you're part of a sentient creation and that everything is working together. You just know that in your blood. That's my sense of you. And that the hope that gives you is the hope that you can transmit, but that it isn't transmitted by words or philosophy or beliefs or systems or symbols or technology in the brain. It's transmitted by knowing it. And that that what you do by creating and communicating, that communicates hope, not in what you communicate, but in the fact that you're doing it. Like earlier, you were talking about, you were questioning what I said about magical realms and giving people hope. So you didn't use the word hope back then, but by showing them that magic exists. Well, I wanted to say at that point, have you never read Bukowski?
Oh, yeah.
Because Bukowski gives hope and meaning by writing about the shit. And the working in a post office for 10 years of his life, basically a completely meaningless, futile existence. But the fact that he turns it into poetry without sentimentalizing it or, candy coating it, on the contrary, probably makes it seem even worse than it was in some ways. And he was a romantic, so I'm not idealizing him, just putting him as a counterpoint to that when we're immersed in the mundane, we don't necessarily need a dose of magic. We need to know that the mundane itself is magical. It's right there in the dirt of things.
Your own mystery unfolds down and out while the winds rail and raise and empty stomachs cry for the soul to feed itself its own needs. And the cannons fodder and the losses and the graves add up to a meal. You can't stomach it, so chug to eat.
At its most ideal, I would almost argue that's what synchromysticism is. Again, I'm not a pop culture fan, 30 days out of the month, you're 360 days out of the year or whatever. My point is that if something can show a little poetry in the mundane, I ultimately think that's a good thing. So even a Kantian approach of like, hey, let's look at the career of Jennifer Aniston, which to me is a meaningless pile of shit on most days. And it doesn't get more, mundane, or I should say it doesn't get more mundane than that. Not to say it's meaningless, but say it doesn't get more mundane than that.
That's not really true because it's a fantasy realm itself. It doesn't get much more mundane than working in a post office for 10 years of your life. That really is, I mean, maybe seems like a false dichotomy, but I don't think so. I think, like, I've been doing renovations on this house, so I've got a pretty good juxtaposition. That is really mundane work. It's not soul-destroying drudgery like working in a post office might be, but I don't think mundane has to be soul-destroying. Maybe that's part of the point. Neither is working in the post office. Actually, it's in your attitude towards it. But I can certainly contrast, like, the creative work I do online with building a bathroom, as I'm currently doing, and how it engages a completely different part of me, and I sure as hell don't need some technology of symbolism in my brain to do it. But on the other hand, I do need to tap into my whole, body knowledge, and be instinctive and be present and be aware, and I can't remember what I was saying now. What was the point I was making?
you make a distinction between, what is truly mundane. And
yeah, well, I mean, it was Coetzee, for example. I think that Coetzee does communicate joy in what he does. Again, but not what he says. I think what he says in his interests, and I've had my own, riff with Coetzee, it seems pretty meaningless to me. But the medium is the message, and the way he does it, okay, it's not enough to get me interested because it does seem a bit dissociative, but what value it does have is that he really is consummate about it. He gets consumed by it, and that communicates that passion, and that I think that seems to me the kernel of hope. If you can read, if you work in a post office your whole life and somebody gives you a Bukowski book and you read that and you think, well, this guy, he's in exactly the same situation as I am, but he turned it into poetry. Never mind that he became successful. Just the fact that he created something beautiful out of that and that somehow his spirit was transformed, let's say, a more neutral term, refined, through that mundane experience, that's a ray of hope that I think is meaningful. It's sort of like the seed that's under the earth that's cracked and just everything is dark, but I don't know actually what the equivalent would be for that seed, but somehow it gets a semblance that there's a movement upward, however it gets it, that the pressure and the darkness of the mundane itself is not something to escape, but is itself a process that is pushing us towards the light. That's the hope to me, and that's why I'm skeptical of all of these audience cults that are promoting hope based on what I would say is a dissociative fantasy of transcendence or a semblance of heaven, rather than a recognition and acceptance that the dirt is good, the dirt, the dark, you know, mm-hmm. the pressure, mm-hmm. the despair, the disintegration, it's all good. I mean, that's the hope.
I would agree with that distinction. Is okay. So even though I do, I could make the argument for a similar argument for the value of Kotze's work. I like that you said his passion serves its own purpose. Maybe his message is less valuable than his passion. I like that. That brings very true to me. I do think that there's, you know, if you look at the culture these days, most 20-something-year-old kids cannot relate to working in a post office for 30 years, but they can relate to being over-mediated, over-sterilized, commercialized, short attention span. And so for someone to come along and say, hey, actually, pay attention, you can take this soup that you're swimming in, this media soup, and find something even in there. I do think that there's a possibility that it has a value for a generation that's, to me, again, that is pretty mundane. It's not a hardship in the sense of working, toiling away, but it is pretty mundane, and it is pretty it's not ideal in any way. I don't think being over-mediated couch potatoes is an ideal situation. So if we can take those people and say, hey, actually engage with it and do something more active, I'm okay with it. Anyway, I don't want to get lost in the Kotze thing. I just want to say is I would also make the distinction that I think there is still an extra layer of value that I see in his work or that school of work. But ultimately, your point of the distinction between transcendence and a true valuing is you're singing my song, man, because that's the part that scares me when people say, oh, we're going to transcend this as if it's it's the 2012 cult, it's the Jupiter cult, it's the, you know, the even the Christian idea, right? The kingdom has not yet come, you know, it's all that sort of stuff. I'm much more of the God, what was that, like 80s pop star, you know, ooh, baby, if you know what love's worth, we'll make heaven a place on earth, uh-huh. you know, as horrible.
Isn't that what Hitler was trying to do? Sorry, couldn't resist.
What, though?
Wasn't that what Hitler was trying to do? I couldn't resist that. But.
Possibly. We could, of course, have, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. You and I think are both really aware of that we have really good intentions, but we're always tiptoeing careful of the dangers, the hidden dangers in our actions. And that's probably a smart thing to do. But I would still, I'm going to push towards a heaven on earth with as much energy as I would like to see this being elevated and remedied over transcending out of it. To me, that's a cop out.
Mm-hmm.
We made a mess out of this planet and sat on our ass and took a lot of drugs and watched movies, and now we get to somehow escape to the fifth dimension and leave the rest of the schmucks to deal with the mess we made. That to me seems a pretty horrific message.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that the heaven on earth thing is, I would say even that's a bit too much, that's too transcendental for my taste, even that. Like, I was thinking that the thing, the evil of hope, the last thing in Pandora's box, is that it's predicated on the belief that what now is not good enough. That the way things are not good enough, because if they were, why hope, right? Any kind of hope is a hope for change, hope for something to get better, and therefore the context for the hope is that things are not the way they should be. And that, back to Saturn, just ain't so. Things are exactly the way they need to be. So I guess it's the human arrogance. And I think once hope becomes intention, as you put it, then it starts paving the road to hell. That it's already false hope once it is actually becoming intentional, as opposed to the hope that I'd say is just a very quiet knowing that everything is the way it needs to be and that it is moving towards ecstasy, to quote our friend Coetzee. Everything is
Oh,
moving.
that's really fascinating. It's an area I actually can't agree with you on. I mean, I get the sentiment behind it, but the idea that everything is perfect as it is. I mean,
Well, again, you shouldn't
even if
put
I
words in
concept
mouths,
cons
but because as soon as you change the phrasing, like I didn't use the word perfect, I can't really ex
You said everything is as it
as
sh
it needs
so
to
yeah, and
be,
I'm
yeah.
really sorry. That's not my yeah. Everything that's it's not my intention to skew your
No,
words. I
that
hope you
wasn't my
understand,
point. But my
but
point
I.
was is that we do this all the time. We will hear what someone says, and then some part disagrees, and then we reinterpret what they said so that we can disagree with it more, and then we end up arguing with our own thoughts. And this isn't a criticism view, this is what we all do. And I notice it more and more in how I get misread. And it wasn't a big misreading, but the difference between everything is perfect and everything is as it needs to be is still a pretty big difference.
Yeah, that's I guess that was less of a misreading you and more of a I read Candide yearly as a sort of meditation. That's it sort of spoke it's I think it struck that part of me. There's like I said conceptually on a day-to-day basis. And then maybe I mean, who the hell? What do I know, man? Like, again, this it's the intellectual part of me that disagrees with that statement. It's the but there's this nagging thing in my mind that says, but what about kids being bombed and starved to death, and my tax dollars
Absolutely,
going to pay
absolutely.
for
And you get
their.
me started on child abuse and all the rest of it, I mean, we'd be in the same corner. But if
Right.
we bring it, as I think you have to eventually, to one's own plot of land, one's own immediate circumstances, then it's not so much that I know that everything is the way I want it to be, because it isn't in my own life, but I do know that it is as it needs to be, and that when I try and fix it and try and change it and kick against the pricks and try and improve my life, it just generates frustration and angst, and it's always driven by the wrong part of me, yeah, the part that actually won't just accept the way things are. So then I'm bold enough to extend that knowledge to everything, to the whole universe. I'm going to take that leap because I can only refer to my own experience, and that's the way it's always going to be. And just, yeah, base it on that knowing that everything is always as it needs to be in my life, even when I'm struggling against it and hoping for it to change. Some part of me knows it's just the way it is, dude. I mean, again, it's that Saturn again. Saturn, what does Saturn say when you say, I don't like it, you know? So what does the stern father say? He just says, tough. That's the way it is. And I do, I actually love that. I love that Saturnian energy in myself. And because it's like to Saturn, the heaviest dude in town, everything is light, because he's heavier than everything is light compared to Saturn's. So when you embody Saturn, you're surrounded by light, by lightness.
That's beautiful. I like that a lot.
And we just went over the 2-hour mark as well, and I was going to keep it to an hour.
Monkey said to man, I want your fireman. Said to monkey, I want your brain. Monkey said to man, my desire is to be like the mankind.
I was thinking today that what I'm doing now is, because most of my regular listeners are probably not really digging it that much because I'm taking new departures, but I'm getting new listeners, so it's a fair trade. But today's chat is definitely going to satisfy some of those old hangers-on that won't go away. Yeah.
God bless him.
Yeah, God bless him.
Space is mine. Oh, here comes the monkey. And monkey space is mine. Oh, here comes the monkey. And monkey space is mine. And this was all that monkeys built when his world came tumbling down.
La vie dans la jungle, c'est comme un sympa. Des lèvres, l'air de bois, tout pose des problèmes. Les songes sur les arbres préparent.